until the rock before their eyes to give forth its water, and you shall pour the water out of the rock. So you shall give the congregation and their livestock drink.
One more quick thing before we run for the week. You know my show is available on Video on Rumble. You also know I am an equity holder in Rumble. It is the YouTube alternative now. We do not censor content for politics. My account's available at rumble.com/Bongino. I want to welcome with open arms.
There comes the time.
All great conservative content videos are now available on Rumble. There's no reason for you to go. I can't tell you what to do. Stop supporting Google or YouTube. Watch my show on Rumble. Again, we're rumble.com. Great Vanessa D'Souza. 5 minutes to celebrate.
Somewhere we'll soon make a change. We all apart.
So Moses took the rod from before the Lord, as he commanded him, and Moses and Aaron assembled the congregation before the rock, and Moses said to them, "Hear now, you rebels, must we bring you water out of this rock?" And Moses lifted up his hand, and with his rod he smote the rock twice. Water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank. God has chosen much information to come up regarding the events leading up to Moses ascended the heights of Mount Nebo, while Israel camped out in the plains of Moab. From there, he had a clear view of the entire promised land, all the way to the coast of the Western Sea. Now, Moses went up from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo, to the top of
I believe I can soar. Sometimes can seem so loud. There are miracles in life I must achieve. But first I know your thoughts inside of me. Oh, oh, if I can see it, then I can be it. If I just believe it, there's nothing to it. I believe I can fly. I believe I can trust the sky. I think about it every night and day. Spread my wings. Hey, 'cause I believe in you. Oh, if I can see it, then I can do it. If I just believe it, there's nothing to
purple rain, purple rain. from us regarding the events leading up to Moses' passing. Moses ascended the high Mount Nebo while Israel camped out in the plains of Moab. From there, he had a clear view of the entire promised land all the way to the coast of the Western Sea. Now, Moses up from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo to the top of Pisgah, which is opposite Jericho. The Lord showed him all that, Gilead as far as Dan, and the land of Ephraim and Manasseh, and all
when Moses got
to the heights of Mount Nebo, while Israel camped out in the plains of Moab, from there he had a clear view of the entire promised land all the way to the coast of the Western Sea.
But God wouldn't let
now, Moses went up from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo to the top of Pisgah, which is opposite Jericho, and the Lord showed him all the land, Gilead, as far as Dan, and all Naphtali, the land of Ephraim, and Manasseh, and all the land of Judah, as far as the Western Sea, and the Negev, and the territory in the valley of Jericho, the city of palm trees, as far as Zoar. Deuteronomy chapter 34, verse 1 through 3, New American Standard Bible. According to the scriptures, and the Lord showed him all land. This was the manifestation of God's favor toward Moses. God gave him a glimpse of the promised land, even though it was impossible for him to set foot there. Moses gazed in the direction of the promised land while perched on the peak of Nebo, which is part of a mountain range known as Pisgah. This peak is located in what is now the modern nation of Jordan. God's last words to Moses. Deuteronomy chapter 34, verse 4, Amplified Bible. Then the Lord said to him, this is the land which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants. I have let you see it with your eyes, but you shall not go over there. We read, this is the land I swore to give you. These present tense words were spoken to Moses at the summit of Mount Nebo as he gazed westward and saw the promised land. The locations are listed in a large counterclockwise circle from north to south. Moses sees the entire promised land in this expansive view. The invitation to Moses to view the land was not merely a kindly provision of God to allow his servant to view Israel's inheritance. It may have had some legal significance. There is some evidence that this was part of a legal process. A man viewed what he was to possess. Thompson. We read, I will give it to your descendants. God swore to give it to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob's descendants, and the promise was about to be fulfilled. Moses was permitted to lead the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob all the way to the promised land, but no further. We read, I have caused you to see it with your eyes, but you shall not cross over. What a tense and tumultuous time. When Moses saw this, it filled his heart with joy because he could now see the promised land more clearly than ever before. Despite this, there was undeniably a feeling of regret in his heart. He was well aware that it was his fault. The event occurred in Numbers chapter 20, verse 7 through 12, Amplified Bible. And the Lord said to Moses, take the rod and assemble the congregation, you and Aaron, your brother, and tell the rod before their eyes to give forth its water, and you shall bring forth to them water out of the rock. So you shall give the congregation and their livestock drink. So Moses took the rod, and Aaron assembled the congregation before the rock, and Moses said to them, here now, must we bring you water out of this rock? Moses lifted up his hand, and with his rod he smote the rock twice, and the water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank, and their livestock. And the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you did not believe in, rely on me, testify me in the eyes of the Israelites, you therefore shall not bring this congregation into the land which I have given them. God specifically instructed Moses to take the rod, but not to use it. When Moses spoke to the rod, God promised to provide water for Israel. God told Moses to strike the rock on Mount Sinai, and water poured forth, Exodus chapter 17, verse 6. God told Moses to only speak to the rock while holding the rod in his hand. Moses started by doing exactly what the Lord instructed him to do. He took the rod and gathered the Israelites. God never told Moses to leave the Israelites, especially in such a harsh, angry tone. There was not one of them. It was terrible enough for Moses to leave Israel. It was worse for him to do so with an angry attitude filled with bitter contempt for them. When Israel had previously done this, he had reacted differently. When the people rebelled at Kadesh, Moses fell on his face before God. Moses cried out to the Lord, not the people, at Meribah. Moses confronted the people at Massah and Meribah, but without the anger and bitterness seen here. There are numerous explanations for Moses' sinful reaction, but none are adequate. He was provoked, but his response was sinful. Described her in Psalm chapter 106, verse 32 through 33, New American Standard Bible. Also provoked it at water, so that it went badly for Moses in their account. Because they were rebellious against his spirit, he spoke rashly with his lips. Since Moses and Aaron appeared in front of the people, Moses addressed the people as if it were he and Aaron who would provide them with water rather than the Lord. Moses directly saved God by striking the rock rather than speaking to it. He not only hit it, but he struck it, and he only had to strike the rock once at the beginning of the Exodus journey. Despite Moses' failures in both attitude and action, God still abundantly provided for the people. Perhaps Moses thought God was pleased and everything was okay because the water was successfully delivered. Because God loves his people so much, he uses imperfect instruments. The fact that God uses one does not imply that person's relationship with God is serving with God's heart. Moses committed an unholy act. He transformed God into an angry man or one of the moody pagan gods and did not represent God's heart and character in front of the people. God's reprimand to Moses was harsh. This great Israelite leader would not lead them and someone else would fit. We would have assumed that he was exempt from the decree that all of the generation of the Exodus' age would perish in the wilderness. But no matter how great a leader was, Moses was still a man subject to God and God's law. This may appear to be an unjust punishment for Moses, and he had to pass the stage short of Canaan because of one seemingly minor error. But God held Moses to a higher standard because of his leadership position in the nation and his unusually close relationship with God. It is unjust to hold teachers and leaders to a perfect standard. It is right to hold them to a higher standard. James 3, verse 1. Do not be teachers in large numbers, my brothers, since you know that we who are teachers will incur stricter judgment. Most importantly, Moses wrote a beautiful picture of Jesus' redemptive work through the rock which provided water in the wilderness. The New Testament makes it clear this water-providing and life-giving rock is a picture of Jesus. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 4. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 4. New American Standard Bible. And all drank the same spiritual drink, for they were drinking from a spiritual rock which followed them, and the rock was Christ. After being struck once, Jesus gave life to all who would drink of him. John chapter 7, verse 37, New American Standard Bible. Now, on the last day, the great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried out, saying, if anyone is thirsty, let him come to me and drink. But it was unjust for Jesus to be struck again because the Son of God only needed to suffer once. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 10 through 12. By this will, we have been sanctified through the offering of the body of Jesus Christ once for all time. Every priest stands daily ministering and offering. The sacrifice can never take away sin. But he, having offered one sacrifice for sins for all of them, sat down at the right hand of God. As Moses should have only used words of faith to bring life-giving water to the nation of Israel, Jesus can now be approached with words of faith. Romans chapter 10, verse 8 through 10. But what does it say? The word is near you, in your mouth, and in your heart. That is, the word of faith which we are preaching. Confess with your mouth Jesus as Lord, resulting in salvation. Moses ruined his picture of the work of Jesus God intended. At the end of it all, God was seen as holy among the children of Israel. Moses did not hallow God in this incident, but God hallowed himself through the direction of Moses.
Moses.
What drama? What pathos?
Moses was 8 years old, but he didn't obey what God said. He hit the rock, and God said, speak to the rock. You, as a prophet, you have to do what God says. And as the people that listen to a prophet must obey the word of the prophet because it's coming from God. God chastised Moses, but Moses would not go to the promised land. He would see the promised land, but he won't go.
What inward pain, what sense of accomplishment mixed with disappointment must have been in Moses' mind as he looked over the land the Lord had promised to Israel? Calend. Looking over the vast panorama, Moses saw the culmination of his life's work, leading the children of Israel into the promised land, and heard God say, as clearly as he had ever heard God speak, this is the land. The then burial of Moses, the Lord's servant. Deuteronomy 34, verse 5 through 8, Amplified Bible. So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord, and he buried him in the valley in the land of Moab, opposite Beth Peor. But no man knows where his burial place is to this day. Although Moses was 120 years old when he died, his eyesight was not dim, nor his natural strength abated. The sons of Israel were Moses in the place of Moab for 3 days. Then the days of weeping and mourning for Moses were ended. Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab. Moses' epitaph, what we might call a line of tombstone, though he actually had none, was simple. It had nothing to do with Moses, prince of Egypt. It wasn't Moses, Egyptian murderer. It had nothing to do with Moses, shepherd in the wilderness. It was not Moses, national spokesman. It was not Moses, the miracle worker. It had nothing to do with Moses, prophet. It had nothing to do with Moses, the man who saw a piece of God's glory. It had nothing to do with Moses, who never entered the promised land. At the end of it all, the title was simple, Moses, the servant of the Lord. This should suffice for us. We often say it, and it sounds humble when we say it, but living it is more difficult. To be content with being the Lord's servant is a priceless treasure, and it is the happiest station in life, because when the master is glorified, the servant is content. A simple test can reveal whether or not someone is truly a servant of the Lord, how they react when they are treated as a servant. Many are pleased to be servants for people of our own choosing, or servants of our own choosing, but that is not being a true servant of the Lord. That Moses, the Lord's servant, died. Moses, exact as God had promised. God's promises are certain, including his more severe promises. Everything happened in accordance with the Lord's word. The phrase, according to the word of the Lord, literally means from the Lord's mouth. And he buried him in a valley, we read. Notably, the Lord buried Moses. This was more complicated because the devil fought with God over Moses. Jude chapter 9 is an occasion when the mighty archangel was out with the devil for the body of Moses. It appeared that there was a dispute regarding the body of Moses, and Jude indicates that Michael, the archangel, tempted this conflict by appealing to the authority of the Lord, saying, the Lord rebuke you in response to the other party. It is not entirely clear why Michael fought Satan over the body of Moses in the first place. Some people believe that the devil intended to use the body of Moses as an object of worship to tempt Israel into engaging in idolatry. Moses and Elijah made the witness of Revelation chapter 11 together. Matthew chapter 17, verse 1 through 3. And I will grant authority to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy for 1260 days, 42 months, 3 1/2 years, dressed in sackcloth. These witnesses are the two bodies, the two lampstands which stand before the Lord of the earth. And if anyone wants to harm them, fire comes out of their mouth and devours them. So if anyone wants to harm them, he must be killed in this way. These two witnesses. The power for God to shut up sky so that no rain will fall during the days of their prophesying regarding judgment. And they have power over the waters, these rivers, to turn them into blood and to strike the earth with every kind of plague as often as they wish. Revelation chapter 11. God wanted to protect the body of Moses, so no one knows his grave to this day. Apparently, they foraged for it, as would be expected, out of a passion for marking this great leader of the nation. When Moses passed away, he had lived a life that could be neatly segmented into thirds. He had lived for 120 years. He served as the crown prince of Egypt for 40 years, then spent 40 years as a simple shepherd in the desert, and finally spent 40 years guiding the children of Israel to their destination in the Promised Land. The first two-thirds served as a foundation for the final third's content and activities. Moses was willing to allow God to mold him over a period of 80 years. This is true of the observation made in Deuteronomy chapter 31, verse 1, was correct because neither his eyes nor his natural vigor had diminished. The children of Israel shed tears. Eventually, the period of mourning and lamentation over Moses' death ended. The days of mourning for Moses, which was of such great importance, came to an end. It was time to move on to other things. The program that God had in mind did not come to an end with Moses, nor did it come to an end with any man. The baton has been handed off, and the work will continue. The legacy of Moses. Deuteronomy chapter 34, verse 9. Now Joshua, the son of Nun, was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands on him. The Lord had commanded Moses. We read, Moses had laid his hands on him. Moses' prayer for Joshua was answered. Joshua was, without a doubt, overflowing with the spirit of wisdom. The children of Israel, to their credit, paid attention to him. The true litmus test of a leader is whether or not other people actually follow their lead. The unique legacy of Moses. Deuteronomy chapter 34, verse 10 through 12. Since that time, no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face, none equal to him, in all the signs which the Lord sent him to perform in the land of Egypt against Pharaoh, all his servants, and all his land, and in all the mighty power and all the great and terrible deeds which Moses performed in the sight of all Israel. Joshua was a capable leader for Israel, and God's will continued, but that did not diminish Moses' unique legacy in any way. Since then, there has not arisen in Israel a prophet like Moses. We read, since then, there has not arisen in Israel a prophet like Moses. We read, whom the The phrase, face-to-face, does not mean that two people will actually come into direct physical contact with one another. Rather, it connotes communication that is open and unrestricted. Most really close relationship with God throughout his life. We read, all the signs and wonders which the Lord sent him to do. Moses held a special place in history due to the extraordinary number and variety of miraculous feats that were attributed to him. As it is written, all that mighty power and all the great terror which Moses performed, we learn that Moses was unparalleled in the power and authority with which he led the people of Israel. We are told that there has not been another prophet like Moses to arise in Israel since that time. However, there have been great rulers of Israel, as well as leaders, prophets, and priests. But before the arrival of Jesus Christ, who is known as the Messiah, there was never another man who held all offices in such a glorious manner as Moses did. In him were concentrated all the great offices of Israel, prophet, ruler, judge, and priest. If some who held these offices were great, Moses was the greatest of them all. Thompson.
99% of Christians
Moses
misunderstand this Bible verse.
God
is any sick among you? Let him call for the church.
Now David, youth of angels. Just like Jesus, David was a man that believed in the reality of God. David kept the angels so busy every single battle he fought for his entire life. David dispatched angels to pursue his enemy. The psalmist wrote that the God of Jacob would protect him, that he will see assistance from his sanctuary, and that he will remember all the sacrifices you have made. Some put their faith in horses, while others rely on chariots. However, God will defend those who follow the terms of the covenant. Because God is their defense, even when everyone else is fallen, they will continue to stand tall. Psalm chapter 35, verses 4 to 8. Let those be ashamed and dishonored who seek my life. Let those be turned back in defeat and humiliated who plot evil against me. Let them be blown away like chaff before the wind, worthless, without substance, with the angel of the Lord riding on. Let their way be dark and slippery, with the angel of the Lord watching and directing them. For without cause they hid their head for me. Without cause they dug a pit of destruction for my life. Let destruction come upon my surprise. Let the net hit me catch him. Let every destruction that it fall. Let those be put to shame and brought to dishonor who seek after my life. David asked God not only to protect him, but also to vindicate him. To be seen and known that he did serve and obey God, and that those who opposed him were made like chaff before the wind. Let the angel of the Lord chase them. For emphasis, David prayed twice for the intervention of God's special messenger, the angel of the Lord. Without cause, they have hid their neck for me. David made this request to God, not once, but twice, to drive home the enemies were attacking him for no good reason. David could rightly pray that those who came against him did so without cause. Sometimes God protects his people by sending one of his angels to meet our physical needs. One such story is the story of Hagar in Genesis chapter 21. After being cast out of Abraham's household, like Sarah and Isaac, Ishmael, wandering in the wilderness without adequate water, we can pray on this principle against our spiritual adversaries, principalities and powers that battle against us in the spiritual realm. The devil has snares, and he has strategies against us. 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 11. To keep Satan from taking advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his schemes. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 7. And he must have a good reputation and be well thought of by those outside the church, so that he will not be discredited and fall into the devil's trap. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 2. Now an overseer must be blameless and beyond reproach, the husband of one wife, self-controlled, sensible, respectable, hospitable, age. We may really pray that the devil is caught in and by his snare strategy. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 26. And that they come to their senses and escape from the wrath of the devil, having been counted by him to do well. Go on to say, because you have made the Lord, who is my refuge, even the Most High dwelling place, no evil will befall you, nor will they come near your tent. He will command angels in regard to you, to protect and defend and guard you in all your ways, obedience, and service. They will lift you up in their hands, so that you do not even strike your foot against the stone. You will tread upon the lion and cobra, the young lion and the serpent you will trample underfoot. Psalm chapter 91, verses 9 to 13. Because you have made the Lord your dwelling place. The principles and promises in Psalm chapter 91, verses 10 to 16, are directed toward those who trust in the Lord, making him in their dwelling place, their source of life and satisfaction. For he shall give his angels charge over you. This describes another way God may care unto his people, through his angels, commanding them to keep and bear up his people. The angels of God shall have an especial charge to accompany, defend, and preserve thee, and against their power, the influence of evil spirits cannot prevail. These will, when necessary, turn thy steps out of the way of danger, ward it off when it comes in thy ordinary path. Clark. Now angels thus keep us, we cannot tell, whether they repel demons, counteract spiritual plots, or even ward off the physical forces of disease, we do not know. Perhaps we shall one day stand amazed at the multiplied services which the unseen bands have rendered to us. Spurgeon.
Hi, my name is Adam Fishman, and we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the services.
That's how the angels
take part. That it is God who is these angels.
The angels of God.
He gives them charge. From him they receive their commission. To him they are responsible for their charge. From God, thou art to expect them.
Michael Raphael gave the angels of God. Exodus 20 and 23, where God would send his angels. Angels do work. And if you obey the word of God, the angels will come.
For their help, he alone is to receive the praise. It is expressly said, he shall give his angels charge, to show that they are not to be prayed to nor praised, but God alone, whose servants they are. Clark. For he shall give his angels charge over you. The promise in Psalm chapter 91, verses 11 and 12, was quoted and twisted by Satan in his temptation of Jesus in the wilderness. Matthew chapter 4, verses 5 to 7. Then the devil took him into the holy city, Jerusalem, and placed him on the pinnacle, highest point of the temple. And he said mockingly to him, if you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you to serve, care for, protect, and watch over you. And they will lift you up in their hands, so that you will not strike your foot against the stone. Jesus said to him, on the other hand, it is written and forever remains written, you shall not test the Lord your God. Jesus was tempted by Satan to provoke an artificial crisis by flinging himself from a high point on the Temple Mount. And Satan quoted Psalm chapter 91, verses 11 to 12, as a promise of protection if Jesus were to do this. According to what is written in Matthew chapter 4, Satan's use of Psalm chapter 91, verses 11 and 12 as a citation is a pattern of how he perverts the word of God. Psalm chapter 91, verses 11 and 12 were falsely quoted because the devil left out the word, to keep you in all your ways. To test God in this way was not Jesus' way. It was not the way of the Savior. God had never promised, nor ever given, any protection of angels in sinful and forbidden ways. Cool. You shall tread upon the lion and the cobra. In addition to a general deliverance from harm, the protection that God provides for his people also includes a general giving of victory to his people, even over adversaries as strong as the young lion and the snake. There is another interesting connection with the temptation of Jesus in the wilderness. The Lord's trust in his Father also resulted in Satan's defeat, another part of the psalm the devil omitted. Voice. Psalm chapter 34, verse 7. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him and delivers them. Psalm chapter 91, verses 11 to 12. For he will command his angels concerning you to guard you in all your ways. On their hands they will bear you up, lest you strike your foot against a stone.
Angels are motivated by an inexhaustible love for God. David says of angels, "He who dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. For he shall give his angels charge over thee, to keep thee in all thy ways. They shall bear thee up, lest thou dash thy foot against a stone." Psalm chapter 91, verse 1 and 11 to 12. Angels were also sent to protect the prophet Elisha and his servant. Let us set the scene. Ancient Aram, now Syria, was at war with Israel, and the king of Aram was troubled that the prophet Elisha was able to predict where his army intended to go, warning Israel's king so that he could develop Israel's army's strategy. The king of Aram decided to send a massive army to the city of Dothan in order to capture God's prophet Elisha and prevent him from assisting Israel in winning the war. The ruler could only make the most basic plan in his tent with Elisha relaying it in detail to the king of Israel so he could take appropriate countermeasures. Nothing escapes God's notice. He was well versed in the move with Israel's adversaries. Israel's enemies may have plotted to harm them in secret, but God protected them. The king of Israel made a wise decision by listening to Yahweh's prophet. When
you may feel when that there is to a prophet Yahweh, God listened to new
when
stuff.
He informed Israel's king of the Aramean king.
New
Joseph,
stuff that was happening.
He demonstrated not only Yahweh's power on his behalf, but also to the Aramean king that Yahweh was Israel's protector. God's blessing on his people was both a gift to them and a demonstration to others of who Yahweh is. The Lord revealed so many of the enemy's plans to Elisha that the king of Aram became so enraged that he accused his servants of harboring an Israeli spy. When he discovered that Elisha, Israel's prophet, was the source of his problems, he dispatched horses, chariots, and a massive army to capture him. However, because this was the same prophet who had healed Aram's army commander, he would not be quickly apprehended. 2 Kings chapter 5, verses 8 to 10. When Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his robe, he sent him this message. "Why have you torn your robe? Have the man come to me, and he will know that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman went with his horses and chariots and stopped at the door of Elisha's house. Elisha sent a messenger to say to him, "Go wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored, and you will be cleansed." When Elisha's servant saw the horde of enemy forces encircling their city, he cried out, "Oh, my master, what are we to do?" But Elisha was unconcerned. He saw with faith-filled eyes and declared, "Those who are with us outnumber those who are with them." His assurance here is reminiscent of the Apostle John's exhortation to believers, "The one who is in you is greater than the one who is in the world." 1 John chapter 4, verse 4. When we align with God, our adversary is always outnumbered. And Elisha prayed, "Open his eyes, Lord, so that he may see." Then the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he looked and saw the hills full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. 2 Kings chapter 6, verse 17. When God's servants are doing his will and doing his work, are invincible until the task is completed. 2 Kings chapter 6, verse 18. As the enemy came down toward him, Elisha prayed to the Lord, "Strike this army with blindness." So he struck them with blindness, as Elisha had asked. Elisha told them, "This is not the road, and this is not the city. Follow me, and I will lead you to the man you are looking for." And he led them to Samaria. After they entered the city, Elisha said, Lord, open the eyes of these men so they can see. Then the Lord opened their eyes and they looked, and there they were inside Samaria. The Lord answered Elisha's prayer, and his servant saw God's army. Elisha was surrounded by horses and fire chariots. It was a divine protection wall. The divine intervention went so far as to blind the enemy army and allow Elisha to lead them right into Israel's camp. Centuries after God opened the eyes of Elisha's servant, the Apostle Paul wrote that we should prepare ourselves with God's protection.
Proverbs chapter 1.
A little than to be very rich and terribly confused. A simple meal with love is better than a feast where there is hatred.
Losing your temper causes a lot of trouble.
But staying calm settles arguments.
Being lazy is like walking in a thorn patch.
But everyone who does right walks on a smooth road. Children with good sense make their parents happy.
But foolish children are hateful to them. Stupidity brings happiness to senseless fools.
But everyone with good sense follows the straight path. Without good advice, everything goes wrong. It takes careful planning for things to go right. Giving the right answer at the right time makes everyone happy. All who are wise follow a road that leads upward to life and away from death.
The Lord destroys the homes of those who are proud, but he protects the property of widows. The Lord hates evil thoughts,
but kind words please him.
Being greedy causes trouble for your family,
but you protect yourself by refusing bribes. Good people think before they answer,
but the wicked speak evil without ever thinking. The Lord never even hears the prayers of the wicked,
but he answers the prayers of all who obey him. A friendly smile makes you happy, and good news makes you feel strong. Healthy correction is good, and if you accept it, you will be wise. You hurt only yourself by rejecting instruction, but it makes good sense to accept it. Showing respect to the Lord will make you wise, and being humble will bring honor to you.
Proverbs chapter 16.
We humans make plans, but the Lord has the final word. We may think we know what is right, but the Lord is the judge of our motives. Share your plans with the Lord, and you will succeed. The Lord has a reason for everything he does, and he lets evil people live only to be punished. The Lord doesn't like anyone who is conceited. You can be sure they will be punished. If we truly love God, our sins will be forgiven. If we show him respect, we will keep away from sin. When we please the Lord, even our enemies make friends with us. It's better to be honest and poor than to be dishonest and rich. We make our own plans, but the Lord decides where we will go. Rulers speak with authority and are never wrong. The Lord doesn't like it when we cheat in business. Justice makes rulers powerful. They should hate evil and like honesty and truth.
I want you to get ready for God to bless you. This is Bible class. And I want to invoke a spirit in your home tonight, Psalm 119, and the whole Psalm 91 from 1 to the end. Let me invoke that spirit to you. If you got a need tonight, you plan on seeing you. This is harvest time. Go to my website, blessedseed.com. Go to Cash Out. I'm going to do it right now. I just believe that if you plant the seed, you're going to get a harvest. And there's a blessing in your house. And I want you to know where it's at.
There's a miracle in this room with my name on it. There's a healing in this room and it's here for me. Oh, there's a breakthrough in this room. Got my name on it.
Thank you. Thank you.